Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in. We just got done with 4 days of muzzleloader hunting here in Ohio. We had a big group together. I think at one point we had 10 guys with tags, and most of those people actually had guys with them filming as well. But the whole group hunting aspect is a lot of fun. I would say the majority of us feel like it's the most fun that we have all season. The ability to combine everybody's knowledge just helps everybody learn a lot really fast, and the whole atmosphere of group hunting is just a lot of fun. It's something that I know that I've been looking forward to the whole year. I'm looking forward to 2022 already. And in this podcast, we're just going to share a lot of the things that we learned, some of the things that we wish we would have done differently, some of the things that we think we did right, and hopefully inspiring people to get a group together to do this. You can check the description of this podcast and you can see links to all the products that we use every day when we're out in the field. We also have promo codes included for some of those products. That way, if you want to purchase some for yourself, you can use that code and save some money. Thanks again for tuning in to episode 141. Let's start talking muzzleloader season in Ohio.
I'm going to get a drink of coffee.
You're not allowed to do that, Alex.
Throw my gun. All right, we're sitting here with what's left of muzzleloader camp. Muzzleloader season just ended at dark tonight, and at one point we had a bigger group, but a lot of people have left, and we decided to save this podcast for after the season so we kind of talk about all things that we learned. And we had, like I said, we had a pretty big group, but now we're sitting here with seven. It's myself, Zach,
Colin Miller,
Alex Robinson,
Keith Robinson, Ben Robinson,
Shane Kramer,
Grant McCrab.
So, yeah, we're all filming or hunting this season, and this is our second year doing it. It's a 4-day season in Ohio, and we target big, nasty hills, really steep stuff. What else would you guys add to, like, the scene?
No does.
Yeah, it's a no-doe season, public land in Ohio. How does that even look? It's
after gun season, you can't shoot does on public.
Right. So that seems like it definitely has lowered the hunting pressure the last few years. Mm-hmm. What are some other details that the listeners should know about just to set the scene a little bit?
It's a 4-day season, like the first weekend of January, basically,
yep,
through Tuesday.
Yep. It's pretty much been that.
It never will snow.
Yeah.
Despite being early January.
It will
probably
rain
or
day.
Be like 60 degrees.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you'll never get snow.
At least that's what it seems like for the last 10 years or so or more. But, this is our second year hunting with a big group like this. I would say at least Ben and I have been hunting this muzzleloader season for a long time. And I think that I shot a buck, my first buck. I was telling Grant the story of my first buck, and I shot that during the muzzleloader season. Past that, it has been a dry spell for here for probably, well over a decade at this point. So maybe next year's the year, but, we didn't do any good this year, but we learned a ton of stuff, and I think, my opinion is, I think we got better. I don't know. I was going to ask that. What is everybody's opinion this year compared to last year? Alex, we'll hold off on you because this is your first year.
More.
I don't know. My opinion is it went a little bit better. I felt more confident with what we did. I think overall we saw more deer. I feel like our drive strategies were good. I feel like the setups were... I think the setup, as far as like the standards... the guys covering the escape routes, I think that is one thing that I'm definitely going to be looking to try to understand more in the future. But as far as, just communication, everybody kind of know what was going on. I felt like, for the most part, that was pretty good. And
We doubled the size from last year, probably.
Yeah.
And so I would also say we doubled the efficiency, though.
Yeah.
Things went very smoothly this year.
We just always kind of knew what everybody was doing, and that was what we had talked about a lot going into it, just like trying to make sure everybody knows what's going on.
We had specific targets for each one, and everyone knew what the specific target was in each one, and it was just, I feel like we felt confident with every drive that we did.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about it in the car, too, is like improving on group intelligence, like knowing where this person's at, knowing where you're at, and reacting based on where that's happening. And a few times during this season, we may have missed opportunities based on that. And we're like talking about how we can improve that and just like function as a group better, which I think is cool and better than last year.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the biggest thing with doing these larger drives is having an efficient group. That's the.
The fact that you can get 15 people in the woods that are on the same page with down to like 4 or 5 minutes is pretty impressive. Especially there's sometimes where one guy's going 2 miles and one guy's going half a mile.
Right. That's when. Well, I think one thing that I want to hear your opinion on it too, Shane, and then we'll get to Alex on his first experience here. But like. One thing I want to add to this, too, is this isn't, like, a typical... When I think of a deer drive, honestly, when I think of, like, the tech, what's in the deer hunting textbook is, like, you go from point A to B with a wall of humans, and you just straight drive deer. Like, this doesn't look like that at all. And one thing you said, Grant, was, like, you know, knowing where everybody's at. Like, we always know where everybody's at. What we mean is, like, down to the timing of everything. Like, it's not a safety issue. It's a knowing where the, like, knowing how you're going to perfectly catch that buck if he gets bumped. And I think that just always improving those, like, tiny little details for actually getting the shot at the buck. Because we're, like, really close a lot of times. It's just little fine details. So, like, that's one thing that I really, really, really want folks to understand is this is, like, it's very high strategy, very high, like, it's very fine detail to every single move that somebody makes, and we're doing that, like, going into it the night before, and before we go into the spot, we all stand there together and, like, talk about the plan, and I think that you know, it differs from when I was a kid, I used to think that deer drives are just like, go to a woodlot, scrape it out with a wall of guys, have a wall of guys stand at the other end, shoot every deer that comes out of it. I mean,
don't shoot each other.
Yeah, right. And like, this doesn't look like that at all. You know, it is so much different because it's in big hills. Anyway, back to Shane. What's your overall take on it? Improve from last year, the same, or what are some of the things... Either way, I guess.
I think it's kind of tough to directly compare it to last year. I know last year we were more focused on a specific terrain feature.
Mm-hmm.
And this year we weren't as focused on that. It was more like a habitat structure, I guess you could say. It's more what we zoned in on and picked places inside that based on terrain, I guess. It's similar, but there are some big differences in it. There's a lot of things we did better this year and some things that I think still need improvement. But
what are some of the things that you think need improvement?
I would say efficiency. A lot of stuff we did this year was pretty big scale, pretty far apart. Took a lot of time getting to places, getting out of places, getting everybody on the same page to be out of a certain place at a certain time.
Yeah. I think getting out is one thing that, like, is very, very difficult, and I think we can...
That's where we missed on almost all of them. Everything else would go perfect, and then...
There'd be, like, one group that would just, like... And by group, we mean, like, you know, a shooter and the guy with the camera following him. It's just like, where's that person? And somehow the message just like of where to meet was just wrong. So next thing you know, you're like whistling to try to find him, and you know, you don't know if you should go look for him or whatever. And it ended up always working, but sometimes there would just be time wasted. And that's something I want to circle back to. So efficiency and escape routes are two things that I feel like, covering escape routes correctly, are some of the things that I feel like I learned about, and I think we could probably come up with some sort of, like, talk about our experiences more, and then talk about how we could improve them. But I want to know, Alex, like, you know, having not been here, no expectation for it, like, how did it, what did it look like to you?
I would say it definitely taught me a lot about how the deer were going to respond to the fine details of what you're doing. And like you were saying before, how we had like an exact intention in mind, like rather than a wall of people just pushing deer in a general direction. It was really more of like, we're going to assume that there are deer in this area based on the habitat and terrain, and we're going to approach it in this way. And everybody knows that that person's approaching it in that way. And then everybody can kind of observe how that deer responds to it. And so each time a deer was bumped, we learned a little bit more about what to expect based on what intention we have. And I think a lot of times if it just so happens to have a deer bumped from somebody else moving, you don't really have an idea on that because mm-hmm. you don't know what they were trying to do, or they don't even remember how they were moving and, right. you know, whether they were moving and stopping and whether they were able to be seen and only heard and right. things like that. So I think that's the biggest thing to me is learning how to move the deer. It seemed like that's where we had the most strength in this, and we got better and better at it. And that's what I found to be really enjoyable, seeing how we could improve that.
Yeah. Yeah. Sweet. I think one thing that was also fun was just that we saw more deer. I mean, we actually just saw
every drive. I'm yeah. pretty sure.
I don't think there
we could have killed a doe on every single one, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true.
And it was in an area where like last year we were not seeing deer, and we were like a little bit weary going in, not knowing what the deer numbers were going to be like in this area.
But we were intimidated, yeah. I think, last year by it because I think what was happening last year is we had no idea what we were doing. We all look back on that first like day, and we're just like we weren't even really playing the game. We were just like laying down on the court, I guess.
That was just a kid's hiking day.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I think even day two last year, it was like, okay, I think we kind of
we completely shifted gears.
Right. We shifted gears two. And we started focusing yeah. on completely different things, and we tightened everything up. And then I think we took that into this year. You know, with the bigger group, we were able to hit bigger areas. But I also think for me, you know, going into it, doing more bow hunting in Ohio in the hills this year helped me wrap my head around a lot of things, just because I got way more experience just looking at where deer were and just looking at where those beds are, looking at how we're bumping deer. I mean, honestly, like bumping deer is not all bad because you can take it a lot of places. You know, you can take it to your next setup. You can take it to your next, you know, stalk, you can take it to your next, you know, to find your next stalk, you can take it to your next deer drive. And like it's a perfect application for bumping deer is doing this type of stuff. So, you know, I think for me, I thought that it made a lot more sense of how we were going to bump the deer this year. It just, that clicked for me a lot better. Mm. Personally, it was just, And
I think we all picked up pretty quickly to the fact, well, when you have that many people in one area, you can see, you get to hear the other people walking around and mm-hmm. popping twigs and stuff like that. And then I feel like it clicked for everybody like the first day too. You're like, oh, if I'm on this side of the ridge, everything in this bowl can mm-hmm. hear me.
Yeah.
And like just knowing that kind of right off the bat, I feel like everybody picked it up pretty well and knew that you can just hug the backside of that and you're completely good.
It's weird if there's open.
Like our standers had really good access on every drive, I thought, because we paid attention to that.
Mm-hmm. There was a lot of, I guess open air, this is the point I was going to make, open air, you can hear it out here. Everything's so steep and so tight, and I think you could say the same thing about a lot of, like, Appalachia, right? Like, pretty similar hills to this area, whether you're in Kentucky, West Virginia. I'm sure there's, you know, parts of that whole band that are very, very similar to this. And during this late season, you know, having no leaves on, we can seriously hear each other from like 600 yards walking down a hill. Like it's crazy. And like plain as day too. Like if a guy's going step, 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 you can hear whoosh, 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 like it, and then he breaks a stick and then it really carries. So I think another thing too about that stick thing, when you're walking through the woods and you pop a stick, that like perks everybody up. Like the first time you would hear a walker, if he was, you know, or a stander, sorry, or a walker, if you were hearing another hunter during this within the group, almost what always catches your attention is like a pop. And then you look and you see him, you see orange, and then you hear them shuffle the rest of the way down the hill. And it's just, it's insanely loud once it hits open. But like that first pop is usually what catches your attention. So if you're hunting, whether even if you're like you're bow hunting, right, and you pop a stick, stop. Because I think when you pop a stick, deer look, and if you stop, they'll give up on it really, really quick. But if you, well, I know they will. I mean, I said, think, like, I know that's the truth. So every time, like, I'm walking through the woods and I don't want to spook a deer, it's like if I pop a stick, it's like a minute or two committed to just standing in that one spot, because there's no point in moving, because there's a decent chance something caught that attention, even if it's a long way away. So I don't know. I think that's important.
I think two of those points too, like talking about sound, and one thing I learned and one thing that we changed throughout the week, I think, is like time awareness and knowing, like, at first, like first 2 days, I think there's kind of a soft start to the drive.
Yeah.
Like 15-minute window, here's when it's starting. But we started figuring out, like, once that first guy comes over the ridge, he's bumping those deer, and if people aren't, like, in the spot for the drive, it gets going and you're not there.
Yeah.
So, like...
And he's bumping them all in, like, 1 minute.
Yeah. Like, drive starts at 9:15. All right, that might be for one guy who's coming over the ridge.
Right.
If you're there at 9:30, then...
Yeah,
like you missed it, you know.
I think Tristan said it. He was just like, "Yeah, they're just betted on sound, not wind." It's like, yeah, he's. I mean, that's why they're up high.
Yeah,
it was so dead. I mean, I guess today the wind picked up, but other than that, it's been.
But
so
even then,
you can, yeah, really well.
Yeah, so one thing that I feel like I just got to get out, because I learned. I remember being excited for it when I did it, but I did a podcast. I can't remember the episode number, but. If you scroll back through, you can find a podcast I did with Jared Scheffler about deer drives. And I remember him talking about throwing rocks. And I remember just thinking, like, yeah, that seems like a pretty good idea. I don't necessarily know when that would be applicable, but it clicked. And we've really, really used the rock. Or just, like, making extra noise by... throwing things and having less effort. So here's the best example. This was the closest opportunity that we had probably to getting a really, really, really good shot at a big buck. And just every time he stopped, he was out of the, you know, he's behind stuff. But yesterday on day three, the very last drive of the day was kind of like what we had been working back deeper and deeper into the public towards. And there was a high point that we were kind of focused on mostly. On the way in, I was with Grant, and it was just us up on top of the ridge. Everybody else was posted at the bottom around, like way below, but, you know, on the bottom of this ridge trying to catch escape routes. And as soon as we would expose ourselves to new ground, so if we come over the top and there's a bull below us, we're expecting them to now be able to hear us, for one, likely hear us and then skyline us, and if not, we're pitching a rock off in there. And we're like making it sound like we're way down in there, because if you throw a rock on a calm day and it hits treetops, or better yet, hits a tree trunk, spins off, and goes through some brush. It's just like, bong, bang, bong. And then it sounds like stuff's running. So, like, deer start running. And it was crazy, because we started walking at about 5 o'clock, and those deer jumped up at about, past Jake and Tyler, at about 5:15, they said. So, really, not that long. Again, as soon as it starts, there's like a very small window. And I think this comes back to our efficiency thing here. One big takeaway that I had was just the timing, as far as... I remember at the beginning of it being like, just sit your post, like, drive it out, go through it, drive it out. And I think that driver definitely at first can peek over. He can try to shoot the buck himself if he's got the right opportunity for it. If he's got open timber below him and we're pushing out a specific like bowl where, you know, we think a guy could pop over and glass into there and then go down through it, yeah, by all means, take your time. But like most of the time, that guy comes over the top, he gets busted and deer gone, and it's all over in like less than 10 minutes. Almost everyone, if not everyone, the deer were spotted within 15 minutes of
it's kind of like
start time.
Most of the deer that are on that specific ridge you're pushing probably know where the other deer are in there.
Right.
Probably not bedded far from them in general.
Yeah.
So like, unless you get like a random doe out of the way, but it's almost like a group would just be like, all right, we're up and out.
Yep.
And then they can carry other deer with them, or they can get stuff up and moving, but it doesn't take long to just get everything off that ridge.
Especially when it's calm like that. It has been. It's just like... And I think that moving forward, if we could just not put so much effort into, like, call it a half hour. So it's like, okay, we're going to start the first one of the day. We're going to start at 8:30 by 9 o'clock. Like, and if everybody, you know, hears the driver start making noise at 9 o'clock to know that he did get that clean 9 o'clock start, by 9:30, hit the meet point and get moving to the next spot. And I think that's a huge part of our efficiency problem.
That's, I think it's crucial, because there was a meet point and we weren't exactly sure how long it would take. And that second to last one we did today, we said 30 minutes and something went wrong. And it was, people are at the car and some people are not even close.
Yeah, that one. So that's
that
another thing I was going to bring
apart.
Up. You got it. The access has to be good, because that was completely freaking horrible for everyone, except for you guys.
We had a great time.
Yeah. Yeah, we had it easy.
And like, but you know, we get down, and even though you have a meet point, it's just like, oh crap, it's all about access on those, because that's how you get out into the next spot, unless you're hunting a giant chunk like we did day one.
Part of the efficiency.
So every day we got four drives in, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, we did 4-3-4-4. We did 15 drives in 4 days.
So like next year, would our goal be? Five and a bonus.
I think we could do five.
Five and a bonus.
Yeah. I think if we could do mostly five and bonus.
Which is saying a lot
two,
for a day, for when it's like, what, 10 hours of daylight?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we were only getting three last year, max.
Yeah.
Which
is a big
so we improved this year.
Yeah.
And we got up earlier this year.
Yeah. Big part of it.
I would say that's the part of it, but the reason that we got out the door faster is because there was only like four people in the apartment.
Yeah.
And there was three hotel rooms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That split everything up. Yeah, if you're ever going to be doing this, here's a huge tip. And this is going to be the goofiest tip you've ever heard. Have more than one bathroom. You're talking, you're drinking your coffee, things going to go through. Next thing you know, there's a line at the bathroom, and it's like, one dude's like, hey, I'm leaving, and that's me. I'm all...
That's because Zach goes and sits in the bathroom first, so when he's done, he doesn't care about anybody else.
But it's like, hey, it's time to go. We got to go right now, but there's
everybody
a...
has to go right now.
The big thing is most people would never try to pack 10 to 15 people in one little apartment anyways. So that might be a unique issue that we have.
Yeah. Yeah. This year was a lot better. We were just, not using it the same way, and everybody spaced out a lot more, and that just made things a lot better.
People had places to sleep. Zach's sleeping in a trailer outside. I'm sleeping in a van. Larry was sleeping in a van. Like, we just, everybody like had their own space. And so there's not even that much stuff scattered in here.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything was more organized. Everybody's faster. That's a huge thing. I mean, honestly, just, and then another thing was just packing for enough to make it through the day. Like, there was always that chance that if we bumped one and we thought we could hang with him, like, I mean, and I don't know, I get buck crazy. So if I see one, it's like, I'm planning on either it getting dark or dying out here with him, you know. We're going to just hang with him until we can't do it anymore.
Day one, I don't think anyone had the expectation of not going to the truck, and we didn't go to the truck all day. So it was like, people. Some people didn't have water. Most people didn't have food. So it was that was a lesson learned quickly.
Well, the real difference is those of us who hunted with Zach all were prepared for that because we knew this was going to happen.
We had bladders and, snacks and we got some new guys that are like, what is this?
Next thing you know, he's going up the wrong mountain.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. I showed up kind of late on the first day. And at that point, I could tell who was ready for day one and who wasn't, you know. Some people were parched when they made it out to my truck.
Oh, man. Parched and hungry. I mean, I was doing great, but...
You know, one thing that has changed everything for me is I found a pack that I can fit exactly everything I need for a day in. I can fit my camera batteries in there, or if I'm not running the camera, I can fit my, whatever.
Throwing axe.
Your
rocks to throw.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I can fit, my batteries, or even if I'm not filming, I have an external battery for my cell phone for backup. I have, my knife. I have some game bags.
Walk
I have
a radio,
a water bladder, and that's a big one. Having a water bladder is huge. Absolutely. Biggest game changer of them all is having a damn water bladder. It's changed my life.
I'll never carry just a water bottle again. Now, if I need extra water or I'm mixing something in it, got some Ignite for the day, yeah, then I'll have a water bottle too. But always have a water bladder.
Mm-hmm. This bow season, when we were hunting and it was 70 degrees, I was actually taking 5 liters of water in because it was so rough. And we would drink it all. We would need more when we got back to the truck. But this, late in the season, shorter days, I was only carrying 3 with me. And then I would throw, I was throwing a couple bars, a bag of trail mix, and if I could find some jerky that Ben made that was spiced and not the stuff that was not spiced. We had some jerky, and there is a batch in there, bud, that is just bland as all get out. Oh, yeah. It was the backup. It was the backup. We're dying.
You grabbed it out of the big bag.
Greatest rubber meat I've ever had. I'm sorry.
Basically marinated it, and then that one I was just like,
didn't marinate
just
anything.
See how she goes.
Did you marinate in water?
No, I didn't. No, didn't marinate. So yeah,
rest was good.
But yeah, just bringing enough to make it through the day is important to me. It helps get you through big time. I think the bad thing to me about going back to the truck in general is when you're with a group, everybody goes into shut off mode. They're like, oh, I'm going to shed a layer and then I'm going to take my pack. I mean, even me, just literally taking my pack off changes my entire mentality because now I'm comfort mode. You know, it's like, oh, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to, and I think that just wastes a lot of time. I think that if you're going to be moving vehicles, it's you just got to go into it and try to get that group mentality of we are not messing around here. It's get in, get out. Get in the vehicle and get out of the vehicle and start walking. But it's hard. It's a hard thing to do, and we're definitely not that good at it. We always think that we're going to stop into a spot and drive over here, and it always takes a lot longer than we think. That's one thing that I think...
It's way harder, too, when you have that many vehicles.
Oh, yeah.
Even when there's... For elk season, for example, when we were switching locations, is Zach said, we're leaving. We're not stopping at the gas station. I don't care that you want to go because it's going to take 30 minutes by the time everybody goes inside and gets out.
Makes me sound like such an ass.
It's efficient, though. I mean, let's be honest.
Efficient, though, but you're still an ass. I mean,
I'll tell you what. You've been in the backcountry for 5 days. A guy could use a candy bar.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, it's just... I think of it as 4 days. You got a 4 day season. I don't know how many hours of daylight there actually are, but I can guarantee you there's not enough for me. And it's one of those deals. I mean, it can be whatever you want it to be, but like we're all pretty into the idea of like getting our time's worth out of it. So, you know, as far as being efficient goes, I try to think of those little things to just not hold it up. And
so yeah, if you have 10-hour days, which is what it is, 7:30 to 5:30 roughly, you have 5 drives in a day. Everything has to be 2 hours, driving it all to each. So like another thing
we're gonna have to tighten up.
Well, also just picking drives that you don't have to drive a long ways to, or just picking them in the same unit. You don't have to even drive.
More effective.
Yeah, like day one, honestly, turned out pretty sweet. We got four in and like had a lot of
in the rough
patches in there too.
And
I know you like deer there, kicking around other areas.
That's there, right? That one. I mean, I'd be curious if like somebody listening has some input. I would straight up be curious to hear anybody's opinion on this. Like, I have always this gut, and your guys' opinion too. I always have this feeling that when we really start kicking deer around, unless we move like over a main ridge, I feel like you start disturbing everything within the valley, and like within the hollow of the two main. If you start messing with that, then you almost have to get out of that hollow, because you start stirring deer up and 5 does run into a new area or a new bedding area at 11:30, and they're just like, you know, they run up to the other deer and the other deer are like, wait, why are you here? I think that puts the whole deer herd on edge. That's my opinion. I think that might be when, I think deer feel that as pressure, and I think that then it becomes harder to kick them. Or if you go into fresh spots where we haven't been today, and we target areas that we don't think people are, so it's just a fine line, right? It's like you want to be efficient, but I don't think you want to necessarily just pound an area all day and just continue to bump deer around, unless maybe you see a target. Like, if you see a big buck that you want to continue to pursue, I think you can loop around him and definitely make that work. But you have to get eyes on him, and a lot of times, like, you know, we're just kind of stirring the pot, and if we don't see the big one, I think it's just worth moving, like, out of that section a little bit. And the other hard thing is in reality, you know, we're picking a pretty specific, well, a very specific bedding area. How big of a bedding area would you say is our prime? We figured probably like we were doing the one on day 3 where Jake and Tyler had the buck go by. That was 40 acres.
Yeah, but of that, we expect them to be bedded in 5 of those acres.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
So 5. But if you have multiple of those points, then it just ups the odds. I would say 20 to 40 acres is probably what we were doing.
But within that, still a very small. Those are the clear cut sizes that we were doing. But then within that, there was like a specific elevation and specific terrain features and like a point or a bowl that we were focusing on mostly. So when you're focusing on a small area like that, everybody's moving around that area, and in the process you're putting a lot of people in hearing or visual distance of other bedding areas. So that's one of the tough things to me. It's like, okay, there's a lot of places that I would want to hunt between where we're going to park and where we're ultimately going to target. I want to hunt these areas, but to get people into position for the first spot, or you know, the closest spot to the road, then those people are going to bump the deer in the place that we ultimately want to get to, and vice versa. That's always the issue to me. Where, like, Grant and I today were talking about a couple specific points that we watched the deer run out of on the first drive we did today. We saw, I don't know, man, probably 7 deer, 4 does and 3 bucks, go right to some specific points that I think were really good spots. There's a lot of good buck sign coming out of them. A lot of rubs, humongous scrapes, high density of sign. But to get to those spots and set up, you would have got really close to the target area for later. You would have messed that up. And I know the people going across the top would have alerted the deer, the target area for later too. And vice versa, right? You can't go to the back one and come back. I mean, it gets so weird because...
Yeah, depending on where, like, what kind of chunk you're into.
Yeah, I mean, it's all terrain dependent. Like, you can pull it off. You just got to be really conscious that you're not bumping deer.
You just ride off a whole hollow, mm-hmm. big hollow.
Yeah.
You also, I think you got to be focused a little bit on the balance between time efficiency and energy efficiency.
Yes.
Because there's a slight difference between what will get us to the next spot the quickest and what will get us to the next spot with enough left in our legs to even be able to move fast through it. Because, like, it can be rough and, like, you know, you think, I can tough it out, like, it's just going to hurt. But, like, it will slow you down.
Oh, yeah. I think about that a lot.
If you can move fast, then, like, that's key.
Wait, you didn't get the memo? You're not allowed to get tired.
Well, I didn't want to complain.
Well, that's good.
No, but I don't really think that... one thing that I think a lot about is going really far, because I just straight up know, especially in these aggressive settings, like, that gets you away from the hunting pressure, period. I mean, you can everywhere we go, it's like you hit a certain distance down the trail and it's like, okay, later people, all the sign just disappears. Your cigarette butts go away, your drip bags go away, your old tree stands go away, and all of a sudden you feel like you're in the wilderness. And I like that, but to get there, if you can use trails where you can just burn it on a flat area, just cover ground, I think that is, like what we did on the first one today. I mean, had we had a more efficient exit out of that one, we would have had that all done in no time. I mean, the whole group had met up, and it was just Jake and Tyler that were hanging back. Call you out on that one, boys. they were just like...
Well, and see, that was partially a planning thing,
too. Oh, it totally was.
Because, you know, we were trying to call them in, too, and we didn't really think about the fact that the meeting spot that we had picked for the end, they wouldn't even be able to hear us from where they were set up. And, like, we expected everybody to be able to at least hear.
Well, and it was just a communication error where somehow everybody was on the same page of literally a 5-yard circle of where we were going to meet. Everybody went right to it. Except for them. And, you know, that's just, again, communication error. Like, we should have known that. And we spent, like, a lot of time waiting for those guys. Like, probably
45 minutes.
You know, definitely room for improvement there. You know, another thing that I was talking with Grant and Keith about, and think will help us to kind of think about for the future, is I think sometimes we see does, we see deer, and we get a little like, we're like, oh, that's success, that's a win. I don't think of that as when we're buck hunting, I don't really think of that as a win. I think that it gives you the confidence that you were in a good terrain feature, that was a good escape route, and you can totally learn from that. But I think that sometimes it just gets to where we're not trying to actually improve the habitat type. The big buck wants to be in the best habitat type and the best terrain feature within that habitat type. Does are, there's more does than bucks. There always are. I mean, almost always are, right? There's actually just more of them. They're going to be in more spots. I think just bumping does it's good. But it's not like a success. You know, we want to bump, in this season, we're trying to bump bucks. And I think that instead of just being like, well, there's probably deer in there, it's like, I think focusing on trying to improve, finding a better habitat is going to be taking it to the next level for us.
Yeah. Like, on that note, tonight, drive three, the one that was a disaster was, I mean, we kicked the deer. They went to Shane. It was all well and good. I don't think there was a buck up there.
Right.
And we found four beds. He saw four deer. They went right to him.
Yeah.
And then we, you know, did a couple more things up on that ridge. Didn't really see any other fresh beds. Got all the way down to that point at the very end. Big bed, rubs all around it, right above the road on private.
Like, yeah.
There's just, you know, like you said, it's the best spot to be.
Mm-hmm.
The habitat was right there.
Yeah, and to that point, I think one thing we, or tell me your opinion on this, but I think one thing we learned as a group on the week is like target those best spots and those best spots only, because some we'd have some like fluke drives where we'd be like, all right, we're in this area, we're gonna do three drives in here, and there's this middle one on the way that looks decent, but like there's two main spots
right
that we're going, like, let's get in there and do the two ones.
Yeah.
We screwed up because we did that last year too, and we swore that we weren't going to do it again this year, but we definitely did. It's like, oh, well, this one looks okay.
Mm-hmm. Like, let's do four sweet ones.
Two amazing is better than four okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree on that big time. That there was one on day three yesterday that I never had an ounce of confidence in.
I didn't think
that a buck was going to be in there. The terrain didn't set up for it in that one. I didn't know about the habitat. You know, it was a clear cut. It was a relatively new clear cut. It was having it had a lot of the vegetation type that we wanted in it, but it didn't have the terrain feature. It was just basically two bowls, you know, a saddle and what was below the saddle. And it was like pretty weird terrain. One doe came out of it, and everybody saw the same deer. Okay, so everybody saw one of the does, and then nobody got a shot at it, I don't think. Would have had a shot at it.
Yeah.
Would you have?
No, Tyler
could have.
Okay. When it jumped at point blank.
And the only reason we did that is because it was on that same ridge that we were going to walk up anyways, and we were like, let's
still
do it.
But again, that's
it took time from our last one, which was a successful one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to make it sound like we were just like, oh, here's something random, let's just go do that. It was on the ridge system.
It was on the way, and I bet it still took 45 minutes.
Yeah.
It made sense logistically, but not necessarily strategically. And we didn't think about that as much. We were just like, oh, we might as well.
I think it almost messed us up, though, for like the last one. We almost didn't have enough time for that last one. Uh-huh. And Shane even said something to me that just freaked me out at the very last minute. He was like, I don't know if we have time for this. Like, we're about to go. Shane's like, I don't know if we have time for this. And I was just like, ah! Luckily, we did. Unfortunately, we probably didn't have enough time to set it up. Really. What are you laughing at?
I was just thinking to myself, the only reason I questioned whether we had time for it was I didn't know who was making the trek all the way around. Like, if it was a guy like me, yeah, we probably don't have time for that. You send a horse like Jake in there, he's going to make it.
Right, yeah.
Also, I wouldn't have made it.
Also, with that one, we had like committed to like a fairly far back spot that if we would have skipped that middle one, and anyways, we would have done that last one, and then we probably would have just had like 45 minutes of light. So
but here's the difference. I know,
I get your point. Yeah.
I think one thing that I definitely want to improve on is my ideas for guys to block off the escape routes. Like, I don't feel like I'm nailing that, and I feel like Shane definitely has better ideas for it. And I think one of the things that would have been different, imagine this, we skipped that drive that we all, I mean, at this point it's easy to say deem worthless because there was only a doe or two in there. Had we skipped that, I think that we would have all stood there and strategized, and Shane would have said what he felt, that we should have blocked off that side more. And had we blocked off that side more, that buck wouldn't have slipped past Jake and
we would
Tyler.
Have had the time to access in a funky way to get in there.
To take our time.
Multiple
we would
groups have, to go around to that, yeah.
So what would have ended up happening was three. All it would have been was one amazing one instead of four that we kind of rushed. You know, all it would have taken one. I mean, if we had killed that buck, guys, we would have been, I mean, can you even imagine how stoked we'd have been? It's a big buck. You'll see it on the videos. It's a nice one. So, and he escaped the drive just following a doe. He was like lip current. Like, by the time he made it to where Jake was Jake and Tyler, he was walking. He was stopping. He would trot a little bit, maybe. He'd look at follow those does up through there, and it's just like, man, if we would just block that off a little bit harder. And that's what I mean too. It's like, if we would have skipped that one, we'd had a little bit more time to plan. I think that we would have discussed and worked our way through it and all put our minds together a little bit finer, and we'd have tightened that right up and probably shot that buck.
Yeah. I think going along with that, being able to block those routes and stuff, I think it's important for some, we've probably thought about it some, but I think it was with more strategy time, we would have been able to do it better, is like really think about exactly how much we will be able to see and shoot from each spot before we get there. Because I think what happened a lot is we ended up just mapping out and kind of just laying these pins where, like, well, if this terrain seems like this is a good spot, they'd escape, and we can have a guy covering this, and we have a guy covering this. Seems like you have everything covered. And then you get out there, and you realize that, like, it's super thick there. And, like,
now what? Or it's bigger than you think.
Yeah, and then, like, now what? Now, like, I got to move, and I'm going to leave a hole. And it's, like, now you got to figure out where to leave that hole. And so I think there could be some more strategy beforehand on, like, hey, what if this person gets here, he can't see that. Like, having a little bit of a game plan on that is something we probably could improve.
Yeah, for sure. Or he gets down into his bottom where he's trying to catch a, you know, trail coming off the target ridge, and he gets down there and the bottom's just thick as could be, and or there's a deer blockade there, like there's just a bunch of downed trees, and the deer just as a running escape aren't going to go through those downed trees. Well, then what, you know? And another thing, again, that I'm recognizing about when I'm looking at it is I'm too wide. Mm-hmm. Like when we were talking about it afterwards, Shane, like it makes a lot more sense. And I feel like maybe what it looks like is this. Imagine it like this. We're trying to hit every potential trail that comes off. And then that's leaving windows for, like, it's not that the people don't see the deer. And a lot of times the deer are in range. But the times when they're not, a lot of times it's like 150 yards, he stops, he's not behind something. He's 100 yards, he stops, and or he's trotting, and there's no shot or whatever. I think if you just pinch a lot of that in, when he does go through that best spot, which is almost always where he goes, you know, we almost always know which guy is going to get the chance out of all the groups. It's like that. There's one best spot, maybe two. If we just put way more focus on those few spots instead of so many individual spots, I think that would be better.
Yeah. And
I think that is one thing that I definitely want to look at on the map. And I know I'm going to spend an absurd amount of time for an entire year looking at that.
I think on the flip side of that, I think one benefit from us spreading out so far is that we really did figure out how they can escape.
Yeah.
Because I think if you do narrow down on the escape routes that you think are going to happen, but you're not right, you're not going to know how you were wrong.
Yeah.
You have no idea that there was even a buck there.
That's true.
And like that gets real tough. You feel like you're out there just spinning wheels.
Yeah.
I think especially on ridges, like you take like your main ridge somebody's pushing out now. Like let's take day 3. Larry was the guy coming off second drive. We went into that new chunk.
Mm-hmm.
Larry's coming from the west. He's like the main driver, really. We didn't have anybody on the north side of that ridge. And yeah, like, there's two sides to a ridge. They're not all coming off the south side.
No kidding, bud. Yeah. Yeah, he's not going to box it all out.
And so, like, we planned this all to be all of us on the south side of it. And, like, the second one we did differently, and we had a buck go through. I believe that there was maybe a buck in that first one.
Mm-hmm.
And they just did something off the north side, but nobody could have seen him. So, yeah, like, having all around, like you said, every trail, and then just, we could literally shoot each other in every instance on that drive.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't need to be that tight on those mains.
Yeah, that's...
No, I'm trying to kill the guy. But, like, we had so much packed on doe escapes. Like, the obvious doe, you know. There's the obvious point that's right across from the bedding area. The does are going up it. If a buck's following him, he's probably going to go up a 2.
Yeah.
But I think that's key. If you don't know exactly what, like, how the deer are going to leave a certain area, like, you know, if you're not super familiar with bumping deer out of a certain terrain feature or area, I think it could be helpful to actually literally just cover the whole area around it, run in there and just see what they do.
Yeah.
And then after you see what they do once with one or two deer, you know, any number of deer, you're like, okay, I got a pretty decent idea of how they're going to slip out. But since we already kind of knew, like, you know, you had bumped a lot of deer moving around in bow and gun season.
And from year one, from last year. Yeah. Right. Last year we picked up on just reading the terrain features and how they reacted to specific bumps as well. We picked up on that from year one.
There's a lot that goes into that. Like, I've been doing deer drives with 5 to 7 guys for 17 years now, and like every time you see a deer go through a certain terrain feature, you just kind of
you gotta mental memory bank somewhere. Yeah.
And then you have like a massive stack of mental notes of them using one specific terrain feature. Like, you see that on a map, and you're like, all right, this is where he's going to go.
Yeah.
And then 2 hours later, he goes through there. You know, it's...
Yeah, and I'll admit, I'm new to deer drives, you know, because when I did them... I mean, new to deer drives and hills, because when I did deer... I didn't like doing deer drives when I was a kid, because I grew up in western Ohio, and there's just dry woodlots there where, I mean, you walk through it, and... If every deer doesn't come out the other side, it's a big buck that's like sticking tight and he's holding tight. So I learned some things from that, but like I didn't really like it because it was so small scale that it didn't feel like there was a whole lot of strategy behind it other than don't walk past the buck. Like in that situation, you know, those types of deer drives, you're walking and you're just trying to. So for example, if we're going to hunt some different types of public land in Ohio where we've hunted in the past, like some of these really, really thick stuff, like just acres and acres of dense rose brush, autumn olive type stuff. I think in that type of, and with higher hunting pressure, I think with that type of stuff, you gotta be like, the driver's gotta just be like plowing brush and not letting gaps between them, and that's a totally different look than what we're doing. I mean, we're very spread out, really, for a deer drive. I mean, like, there's never any time, I don't think, where I guess I thought about deer drives too. It's just like people are so close and they're shooting towards. I mean, there's none of that. Like, we're so... When you're in your spot, like, you're going to shoot into the most safe spot ever because you're shooting down into the bottom as a stander and as a walker, you're going to shoot, like, down into the bowl below. Like, those are your options, essentially. Like, you're not... It's not this, like... Wallet again, I can't stress that enough. It doesn't just look like walking right through the top. It's so much more
technical.
It's a game of chess.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it has a lot to do with bumping the deer in like it sounds weird, but like comfortably bumping the deer. Like
soft bump.
They're not actually concerned. Like in those higher pressure areas where like or in thicker stuff where they really don't know what's going on until you're closer to them and stuff, like, it's a totally different reaction versus what we were trying to do is make them feel like they were on the upper leg of the scenario. Like, they picked you off before you were a threat, and so they're going to do just a natural, just get out of there type of movement. So we didn't really have to worry about, like, seemed like we didn't really have to worry about those, like, backdoor, weird, sneaking around type of stuff. He's not going to get up until you're past him type of thing, because, like, he feels safe. He sees you on that top, and he's like,
"Yeah, I'm just gonna
slip out of here."
You want to do what the deer wants you to do,
yes.
Or where the pressure is supposed to be coming from, quote unquote, supposed
for
to be.
Their bed for advantage.
Him.
Yeah,
for him. Yeah.
So like, if he's laying there looking at a ridge top where people access, and he's waiting for you to skyline, like you gotta pull. Yeah,
yeah.
You want him to, because then he's just gonna be like, "Oh, gotcha, I win," and he's just gonna trot down the ridge and he's gonna hit the bottom, stop, look back, boom, Shane's gonna hit him right in the heart.
He'll be alright if Green's there though.
Oh, this is one.
Get that one out.
Yeah.
nervously.
He's sweating, dude.
Just sweating.
You gotta talk about it, I think. Because if I do, then I'll just give you too much crap.
Well, you'll see it in the video, and at least here I can...
defend yourself?
Oh, I thought about saying that, and then I decided it was not appropriate. It's pretty bad. But, yeah, probably should have shot one. And basically what happened is Zach and I were...
What was that?
What drive number was that?
It was the first one. It was first one. It was day three, so it was yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday, first drive, Zach and I. And who was up above us?
No, Tyler.
No. John.
Oh, I thought you meant bumping the
John.
John and Tristan.
No.
John.
Yeah, it was John and Tristan.
You too.
That was today. No.
That was
John. That wasn't us. So it was us on like a low road of a logging road. So the logging road came into the side of the hill.
Oh.
So like the side hill, and it split into three. Actually, number one logging road, the high road, was where Tyler was, and he was going straight over the top. And he was ultimately like, you know, our main lead. He was the lead drive. The two guys on the other roads below him, which coming down was Tristan and John, and then Grant and I. And those are just three, I guess, groups we call them. So there's three guns down that. And our goal on that road is to basically box everything in. If something tries to loop around the ridge and basically cut back on the drive, then we're standing in that road. And darn it if it didn't just work.
It did work.
So take over.
Basically, the strategy on that was like we're trying to bump deer at times, but we're also trying to like get to a spot where we can be bumped too. So our movement was like still hunting a lot and then change pace, run up.
Crash a little bit.
And stop and hang out.
Mm-hmm.
Like we'd hear Tristan and John throwing rocks up there and we'd be like, all right, like get ready.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember very clearly, but we were doing like a weird buck move, still hunting, and I was like grunting a little bit. Look up there, and there's a buck walking across the road. And I get like the way I perceived it was the buck had completely crossed the road, gone down, and I turned to Zach, and I'm like, Zach, buck just crossed the road.
Like, and how I perceived it.
Way too casually.
And how I perceived it is like, son, if you just saw a buck, it's close, and like you acted pretty casual for one to have to be, because all we can see is clear cut on either side, so just straight hard brush, like hard brush, and then just this tunnel, and straight down that log road is just like tall grass, so it's very low visibility, so. The shot that we're hoping for is a deer coming right at us. Mm-hmm. And?
Terrifying.
And? yeah, completely terrifying. When your gun's at your hip. So, as I'm turning around from telling Zach, there he is, just coming. And he's doing what we thought, which is he's getting down away from either Tyler or John and Tristan. And he's bombing down onto that logging road, and he's looping around him quietly without crashing through that brush, and he's going to get around him and figure out what he wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, he was doing that when I turned when I turned around, my gun was in one hand on my hip and just hesitate. Like, I don't have much experience shooting running deer.
Yeah.
Like, definitely learned from that one. I'm sure you saw me today, like, walking pretty, like, halfway shouldered in most of that stuff now.
Yeah, when you think you're in the game, you're really, really ready. And I think, so as soon as he saw deer, I think, you know, and I'm telling you this, too, from watching the whole experience and being able to be like, this is what you should do. But I'm not saying it would have necessarily been any different. But in close quarters like that, he's going to be in one spot. He's going to be on that logging road. Even if he crossed it, gun up, gun up, ready. And, you know, that trotting coming right at us at 45 yards isn't an undoable shot. Mm-hmm. You know, he's coming right at you. You've got time to just put it right in the center of him and hold it. Boom. And he had 1, 2, 3 bounds, emergency brake, and then he turned and took a couple bounds. And by the time he took a couple bounds, that's when Grant had his gun up entirely too late. Mm-hmm. And that's like, that's a shot. We got a picture. Ben's got a painting in here. That is exactly the shot. It's a deer bounding, quartering away. That was the only.
I was not on him at that
point. Yeah, yeah. It was just too late.
I'll stand by that. I never had a shot when he was running. I'm not just gonna sling at him.
Sure. And I don't think you made a bad decision after you made a bad decision.
I'll also say that the. Flack I have taken for this after the whole deal is far more painful than not on the bike. So
that's hard about 15 people drives.
Grant wasn't even worried about it until he got back and realized that now everyone knows and everyone is like,
well, we've also got Jake's buddies from Wisconsin who are deer drive fanatics and sling at a lot of running deer. Mm-hmm. So,
well, and that's something I was going to point out too. Like, I've seen so Jake has a GoPro clip from his buddy. I think you can watch a YouTube video on our channel of Jake doing this, but I know he has a clip, I think from this year, from his buddy Zimmy pulling up on a buck and just dumping it at like 15 yards, but it's full sprint. Like, it's jumping like a rabbit and it's full sprint, and he just shoots perfect, drops it right there. And, like, that's a totally different look than what we're doing. Now, if you're doing that, your driving is going to look a lot different, I think. I think you're going to want to get guys in just combing something. Like, if you were going to do flatland cattails, it's a lot more combing. Your escape routes being covered, I think, is going to be, you know, you're still trying to find good escape routes where bucks can stick to tight cover, but, like, it's just the act of the drive looks a lot different. Where here in these hills, you know, we can come around a point, like we've mentioned, and bump a deer 500 yards away in some situations. Or pop over the top of the ridge. As soon as you pop over the top of the ridge, everything below you is just like, oh, there's the source of that sound on the skyline right there. Let's trot away, you know. And when we're getting shots at deer, a lot of times, honestly, I think most of the time, if this ever works and we get one down, it's going to be a stop deer, honestly. Mm-hmm. Or a lightly trotting one.
Yeah, even like walking, because right. A lot of times they're not completely stopping, but they'll get to a spot where like they feel like there's something between the threat and themselves, and they'll either stop or just slow down to the point where they're just like casually walking and just looking around trying to figure out what they want to do, because they were just in get out mode, and now they're like relaxed enough that it's not beside them anymore, and they can kind of look around, and that's when you like totally have that opportunity.
What is known as a trot and gooderin.
Yes.
They're making a decision at that point too. I think their wheels are turning a little bit of like, okay, where am I going next? And that's when they start to do that slow down thing. And you know, your standards are ultimately trying to get right on that zone. And a lot of times it's like Colin said, or somebody said it, maybe Alex, you said it, putting something between them and the threat. And that's one thing that I think that improving our escape route coverage could do. I think sometimes we just like have too much of the textbook deer drive. At least I do. I could just be speaking for everybody when I say this, but like, it's that textbook deer drive where it's like, okay, we're gonna come over the top, we're gonna have everything down below it covered. Where in reality, what's best for them sometimes is to actually, and it's totally solidified it on the logging road whole ordeal. Like, basically, you're behind the driver where the deer goes off the ridge, and he doesn't actually go all the way to the bottom. He just gets lower to where he's down at a different level, and then he cuts back and around and tries to get back around the threat. He's putting ground between him and the threat, but just by going lower and then, you know, moving around the point. I think a lot of times you're doing that, or or they're doing that a little bit and then they're going way down and going way back up, but doing it on like a small terrain, not going way up and over the main ridge. They're just kind of going over another little point just to put more they're putting that terrain between them and danger. And it really is, it's super effective, but I also think that we could block that way off, way better than we did.
They did it today on the first one.
Oh yeah. And going in, I was staring at that thing, and I'm like, we have got a massive hole right there. And I was like, I know deer are going to go there, and every last one of them went through there. And had we just had
guys. Fantastic example of where we don't need people, where everybody else was.
Right, yeah.
I mean, those are the obvious, like, large-scale terrain features, and mm-hmm. every deer went out the next small ridge.
Yeah.
Something I thought about today was, like, if those deer are all bedded up there facing generally the south, west, whatever they were doing in that situation there, all those high points that they could see, they're watching them all day, and they're like, hey, if something comes and bumps me, that's my one, or that's my one.
Uh-huh.
And, like, what's my easiest route or safest route to that high point? Like, because eventually they're ending up at a similar terrain feature,
yeah.
a mile, half mile, whatever it is away. And, like, most they're not just bailing off to the north or what, you know what I mean? There might be something to that that might not be.
Mm-hmm.
But being able to just lay there and see that spot you're going to, get kicked, now you're like, all right, we've been watching that all day. That's safe. We're right. on there.
Right. Yeah, and to Shane's point, a lot of times I don't think they're going that far.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it looks different every single time, but a lot of times it's just like, how can I get some terrain between me and that danger? And it doesn't have to be much, but as soon as they go up, I mean, think about it like this. If you're standing on a ridge and there's another ridge parallel to it, and a deer goes down and back up, and we've all heard it like, you need to stop down at the bottom, to go back up the other side. Good luck.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you can hang with them. I mean, obviously, Ben and I did it during gun season and ended up shooting the buck. Like, you can totally hang with them, but it's not like...
Not when you're driving.
I mean, well, you're not a mountain lion. You know, like, you don't have the pure speed and agility.
It's
like,
gonna,
we just can't. We're
going to take you the rest of the day.
Yeah, you got to work to get over there. It's not like you can just straight up stay with them. I mean, obviously, if you weren't familiar that deer are faster than humans, they are. They know that. I mean, that's their number one escape, is that they're just like the most agile critters in Ohio, for sure.
In fact, their only defense against predators.
Yep.
Those big swords they got on their head help sometimes.
It does wear them out sometimes, though. Like, mm-hmm. sometimes when they'll stop in the bottom. The first day, I think Jake had that big doe go by him. And she was panting when she got down.
Uh-huh.
And got onto their side. And, like, I think sometimes they have to stop and just, like, collect themselves.
Make that decision. Yeah. Make mm-hmm. that decision of, like, okay, what's next for me from mm-hmm. here?
I think that could be something that we could kind of try and target, you know, even more so than the specific exit routes themselves, is, like, to try and find the opportunities where those deer are, like, you know, we might be able to set up on all these trails and we'll see the deer that come through, but they're just booking it.
Right.
But, like, if you can manage to find that spot where it's going to stop, mm-hmm. like, I think that's the biggest key. Or not even stop, but at least slow down.
Where's it going to go?
Yeah.
Well, not worried about how it gets there.
Right. The one thing that you kept pointing out, Shane, is you'd be like, 1, 2, 3, 4, okay. I notice you kind of like count. Mm-hmm. And you're counting the options for the decision that the deer has to make. You're counting how many options does it have to get behind different terrain features to escape. So, like, for example, if on the... I don't know, down... what am I trying to say? Like, the side where they're escaping to, you see multiple fingers that come down and meet in one spot. From that very bottom of all those, like, essentially the, like, what we at THP have called thermal hub a lot. Right at that thermal hub, there's a bunch of different places they can go from that bottom point. So if you bump them down to that spot, and your whole demeanor is to bump them that way. Is that the right word? Maybe not. Your whole goal is to bump them that way. Push them out there. They get to that spot. They have to make a decision somewhere at that bottom.
We saw that a lot. I forget what day that was. Whatever day, we had like 10 deer 10 yards from us.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday.
Yeah. Well, I guess it was yesterday. So that was like almost everybody watching ended up pretty close together.
Mm-hmm.
But we were all in that same thermal hub.
Yeah.
Just on a different piece of it. Those deer all came up to that, and as soon as I hit that first option on where to turn and get out of that, every single one of them slowed down, some of them stopped, and they're all inside 30 yards from us.
Right.
Just trying to make a decision on, like, do I go up and over this ridge, or do I go around this and up and over the next one?
And I think we even cut off one of the what one of those deer planned on doing, because one of them mm-hmm. passed you guys, and then I was just on the other side of that finger, and she yeah. it looked like she was going to try and come down towards where I was, and she ended up seeing me there, and she was real thrown off then. You could tell that, like, she was headed somewhere, and then she was just confused. and like, yeah, we had their spots there.
We had an interesting one as well as far as the deer behavior and those, like, bottoms. When it was when Grant had the buck come up to him in that same drive, four does had come down, and they came down past in front of Larry and Brad, and they were coming up the other side that we had accessed on, and I'm pretty sure they hit our scent trail and then wheeled completely back around and went back down to the bottom and stopped again, and then re-entered the same cut that we were just driving out, that they surely heard Tyler walking through on, but they decided to go back up and re-enter on that drive and just take a different route through that drive and escape a different path.
And they totally did, because we never saw them. Mm-hmm.
I think one thing that I think we're all trying to learn, too, is, like, what are the bucks doing, though?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Those are all those situations.
That's what,
right.
Other than when general, the bucks yeah. were with those.
Mm-hmm.
Fleeing yeah. out. We never saw lone bucks crossing a drain this 4 days, did we?
Mm, we did. The big one.
Those with those.
He was with those.
Did they cross at the same time? One. No. The
oh.
Mag,
big, oh. The one we haven't told y'all about. Yeah. Yeah, that. He was by himself.
The spike that I shot at, that one was probably headed to the bottom. He didn't make it there. He made it there a different manner.
So, I was going to say something about deer leaving a drive, and this is something that I've observed. Be curious of your guys' opinion. Sometimes one of the best things is a buck with a group of does. And it seems like late season, you're going to see groups of does, or you're going to see a bachelor group of bucks. Today we saw a bachelor group of bucks on the first drive. Or you almost see, like, that buck. And it must be something to do with, like, a doe in that group is, like, close to estrus or something. And he's just hanging with that doe group. And I think that when that happens, that is ultimately the ideal. And the reason is because he kind of just gets jammed up, is what I call it. Where all of a sudden he's with all these does and he's just like, what's even going on? Like, I don't even know why we're running.
No, you know what I mean? Forget why I'm even here, dude.
Yeah, and then he's grunting. You know what I mean? I mean, the buck that came past Tyler and Jake yesterday was lip curling. I mean, he was just like, well, now we're doing something else. Like, he wasn't really escaping hardcore. And I think you get the same thing with the bachelor group. I'm not saying that doesn't happen. It just seems like, you know, if you kind of get a train of deer, there's usually only, like, one or two that really even know what's going on. And that's ideal. How you ever plan for that, unless you see them, I don't know. But, like, you get that jammed up buck. So I missed a buck on a drive in Iowa 2 years ago with Ted. And that's, I know that's a video that we have up. I don't remember the episode number or anything. But, like, if you find it, you'll see this wad of does come through, and there's a buck just completely jammed up, and like you can tell he's completely clueless as to what's going on. And I think that that's a completely different, you know, that's ideal. On the flip side, we haven't talked about the super mag and what he did, because that's kind of an interesting one. We had this whole, you know, drive set up on the map. Everybody's kind of moving in together. And the guys that were really more of the standers were on their way. And on their way, they were on the edge of a clear cut. And Brad and Zach, a different Zach, were walking together. And Brad is my buddy from high school. He's not overly experienced in the camera department, and he was running cam. He did his darn best, and I'm happy for that, and I appreciate him. But he was trying to get his phone out because he was getting, you know, what do they call that, bird dog. He felt like there's deer, you know, they were starting to be like, there's deer around here. And he gets his phone out, and he's starting to get ready to start rolling on it, and they're moving into their setup, and they both look over and they see this buck. And he's huge, apparently. Like, nobody... It's all just word of mouth, because there's never really any good footage of the buck. But he's, like, apparently, like, 5 yards away. And he's just... He's heads down, and he's creeping. And he's, like, really slowly creeping. And as he's creeping, Zach's slowly grabbing his gun, trying to raise it up. And as he gets the gun up, the deer hits the logging road and just bolts. And as he's running away, Zach misses him. And then he runs down past Tyler, and Tyler misses him. And because the other guys that were, you know, the walkers, which ended up should have probably just been the standers on this one, weren't quite in position, the deer slipped through the cracks. He definitely wouldn't have made it out of there without somebody getting at least a really darn close opportunity, you know, a dang good chance at him, had we just been in position, but we just weren't quite there. And he actually slipped through, and John and Tristan spotted him slipping out of the drive. So what I think's interesting about that one, and, you know, it's just such a cool big buck move, is, and we've talked about this at length, all of us, and at first, Zach and Brad were just like, he didn't know we were there. And I'm like, he knew you were there. Like, no buck is at 5 yards and doesn't know. I mean, two, like, extremely tall humans aren't there. Like, those guys are both tall guys. Like, he knew they were there. And I think what was happening was, and I don't know, say what you guys think, too, I think that he saw them or heard. I think he probably all of a sudden heard them. It was wet. It was actually raining about exactly when. So I think as that rain was pitter-pattering around that buck, he kind of missed the fact that those guys were creeping down that logging road. And all of a sudden he looked back and he's like, oh, shoot, they're right here. And he started to creep. And he was trying to just creep like, I'm not here. And thinking in his head, they don't see me. And he's creeping, and he's creeping, and as soon as he hit that opening, he got out of there as fast as he could. I think that because I don't think he would have hit that road and just full-out sprinted if they didn't know they were there. I mean, he knew they were there. But it's interesting because that's that hanging-tight type of move, and I don't think that happens in this stuff very often. I mean, I think we go and we break a few sticks, and a lot of times the whole entire herd is out of there like that.
That's a good point. It was very quiet at that moment. Rainy.
And rainy. It was exactly. It was raining.
Visibility was down. Moment. Like, everything was a good point to sneak up on something inadvertently.
Mm-hmm. And I think that they just kind of bumped into him and almost had that chance. I think that's a great example, though, too, of just having that gun. Like, if you're starting to feel like you're around deer, just have that gun right there, because it sounds like, you know, maybe had the gun just been in a position where it could have been quickly drawn, It might have just shot the deer at like 5 yards.
I think gun was slung on shoulder.
Yeah, that's what
I think it was.
You know, one of those deals.
If you're in a clear cut, you probably ought to have a gun in shoulder
because it's going to be 5 yards.
Rule we throw out there from now on.
Yeah. I think part of it too was that he could have. Before, because he, you know, he figured, oh, that buck's moving towards that road. Once he hits an opening, you know, once mm-hmm. he hits the road, I'll have a good shot, and I'll be able to execute quickly. But like, it's one of those things where like, it's not like you're sitting and waiting for that deer to come in, and
right.
he's not unaware. You can't just assume that that good shot opportunity is going to happen.
Right.
And like, I mean, I know this because like I do this all the time with deer. It's just like waiting for the best one, and it's just not
going to
happen.
I can tell you that 4 yards is going to be your best shot.
And so, but like, he didn't want to. You know, he knew like that. Exactly how that deer's body was arranged, and like there really wasn't that much in the way. Like there was some grass, but like he honestly probably could have like taken a shot earlier than what he did, but he figured it was going to be better if that buck hit the road. Mm-hmm. And so
that's the name of the game with the Muzz though too.
You only got one shot.
It's an interesting dynamic for driving.
Yeah. really
especially
when
those Wisconsin guys
time,
are used to rifles.
There's a real mental game when you seriously only have one shot.
Oh yeah.
I think this spring and summer everyone needs to just practice reloads.
Go rabbit hunting with muzzleloaders is what you're saying?
You don't even have to do that. Leave the breech plug out of your gun and just got some powder, pour it in there, ram the bullet down, it'll go straight through, and you just do it again.
Yeah.
You gotta start shooting more before you're reloading.
Oh! Hey. Oh! Cameraman burned you! That's hilarious.
I'd say step one is just getting the gun to your shoulder.
Yeah. Oh, shoot, yeah. I mean,
should we start talking about last year?
Shots for fire.
Not the one that trotted past you at 15 yards. Yeah. We were laughing too because we were like talking about what Shane brought up. He's like, well, could be worse, Grant. He's like, last year when the one got past me, he's like, we put it on the TV and just played it on loop all night. Shoot.
It's so fun though. This group stuff is so fun.
Yeah.
Like, it's the funnest. Mm-hmm. Funnest trip.
It's honestly the most fun out of the year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
I honestly don't think anybody was upset that Grant didn't shoot.
No.
It was just like, people were actually probably pretty excited about it because it was just a chance to just ream him on, you know, not have the gun on his shoulder.
Oh, yeah.
It's been a blast since that happened.
Just
because it takes some heat off of me from last year.
Passing the torch.
That's something that I wanted to talk about a little bit and, you know, kind of maybe end it on that, is just how fun this is. If you ever have the opportunity to get friends around to do this. And, I mean, having a group that's, you know, probably, I would say some of the things to kind of look into as you're creating this group is like, you know, everybody having the same goals. You know, luckily for us, I think we all do have, like, I mean, we're getting after it
Grant,
out there.
Did you shoot that spike and you almost got benched?
You know what?
Other than that.
But there's goals for, you know, y'all have the goals. Y'all have an amount of ground you want to cover or willing to cover. Mm. You know, kind of physical fitness, I would say, being roughly the same is kind of important, I think, because, like,
not
you don't want to be...
Not as important as mental stability, basically.
Yeah.
Like, if you're willing to do it, you don't have to be...
Grant and I didn't see a deer until day three. Until that deer. Yeah. That deer that he didn't get the gun up on was the first deer that we saw, and I think might have still only been the only deer we saw that day.
Yeah, it was.
So, like, you know, that's a mental game.
The whole thing's a mental game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think we're all on different levels from the best to worst physically, but we're all doing the same thing.
Oh, yeah. And it's all mental, for sure. It is for sure all mental. But, you know, reading that within the group, but you know, past that, once you get a group established, the amount of strategy, the amount that you can learn. I mean, I learn from every single person, whether you've been deer driving the longest or you've been deer hunting the longest. I mean, every single person said something that I took a hard, like, mental note of, that I was like, okay, I'm going to continue to hold on to that for the rest of my life. I mean, truly. It may be as simple as, I mean, John, at one point, John just was like, they're hearing you. We don't have to spend so much time. And from that point on, I started throwing rocks and making a lot more noise doing that one. And it's just like, that worked. It straight up worked. So, I mean, just something that simple. I might have not necessarily, like, I mean, probably would have figured that out at some point, but just having enough people to bounce those ideas off of each other, everybody has something to bring to the table.
It's just like bow hunting camp or something, too, yeah. If you have that many people experiencing a hunt at one time.
Yeah, you got 15 sets of eyes in the woods.
Doesn't matter what you're hunting, it's going to be beneficial.
Mm-hmm. It's just like, hey, I'm finding turkey scratchings under this specific oak in the spring. This is where I'm going to go hunt turkeys. You tell that to somebody, boom. Or you say, hey, I'm seeing turkeys on the edge of a clear cut. You know, the hens are nesting in there. I mean, you tell that to your buddies, boom, everybody's on turkeys all of a sudden. Same thing with deer. It's like, hey, we're seeing these deer double back on this log road. Boom. That's the strategy we put into place, and it almost worked 2 days in a row. You know, it's just having that. And then I got to say, too, about our group, the positive attitude is just incredible.
Yeah, I think it's a big part of why, like, it's great for everybody to be, like, real friendly with each other, is that when somebody has an opportunity and can't execute on it, you're not, like, mad at that person or jealous that they got the opportunity. Right. You're like, I would have done that different. Uh-huh. It's like, I'm glad that got to happen for you. Like,
and then we all learn from it, yeah. Right? I mean,
because everyone's a part of the job. It's just like,
we were all excited that the Wisconsin boys saw the two biggest deer because maybe they'll come back.
we didn't want to scare them away out of those hills with no big boys.
I was really curious to see what their perception was, like, halfway through day two. Mm-hmm. I mean, as of only seeing does at this point.
Yeah.
And then trudging a lot of weird terrain and brush that they haven't seen before.
It went from horrible experience of only seeing does.
I don't think horrible
experience. Wasn't bad, but...
No, but they're climbing Mount Everest out there.
Strenuous, in their perspective, they're climbing Everest. And, like, they came straight out of the cornfields of Wisconsin, and then they both just, unfortunately, missed a booner. And it was, I think, that just flipped the light switch.
Yeah.
For all of us. Jack shot at the biggest buck he's ever shot at.
Yeah. Said, and Brad, who...
Brad was shaken up.
Brad, who also just shot a huge buck earlier this season, was like, that's the biggest buck I've ever seen. So, I mean, who knows? We'll never know. Nobody ever really will, except
Brad
for that.
Brad said he just locked up. Yeah. Just for a second. He's just...
Shoot. Yeah. I mean, I love it. It's definitely my favorite hunt because of the group aspect, and I highly recommend it. I would... love to see more people, you know. I mean, if you got experience doing this type of stuff and you and your buddies got bucks down doing deer drives, man, I love it. Send me a picture of it. I think it's sweet. It gets me fired up.
Ran into a guy this evening, last drive. He pulls up, lone dude, came down to hunt for 4 days, didn't have much action. Just bring a couple buddies, kick some deer around.
Right.
Try to figure something out. You'll probably see more than one deer.
Yeah, yeah.
And... you know, might have more fun too.
Might see nothing.
Cool about the group aspect too is that, like, we had quite a few people involved in part of the whole operation that had already filled a buck tag, but, like, they could still be, like, really involved in something. You know, like, that's a unique thing.
Still be hunting. Still feel like you're still hunting this late in the season.
Yeah, you know, we film, so everyone that has a tag has got a guy. Basically, everybody that has a tag has got a guy with them, with a camera.
I mean, the amount of people that come down here and take days off work to not even have a gun in their hand.
Just to film.
It's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, it's super cool, and I appreciate it. And as a, you know, one thing I want to say, if you watch these videos, like, like, these are our buddies, and they're putting a lot of effort into making these videos for really, I guess, I mean, it's obviously fun to them, but, like, there's no, this is not an operation where, like, you know, THP's like, yeah, we're going to hire a bunch of cameramen. These are, like, our buddies from, like, high school from, you know, Colin met him, you know, in Colorado. And it's like, you know, I met Shane through John. It's just like, this is just a group of buddies that genuinely enjoys hunting together. And to come together like that and just, you know, get what you can get for the video and do your best. And, I mean, like you said, having guys straight up taking work off for running a camera. Like, you know, and you know what? If you're, even if you're not making YouTube videos, run around with your buddy with your cell phone and film it. It's going to be sweet.
Yeah.
Like, Colin's buddy filmed, or Colin had a buddy that was elk hunting, and that guy's buddy filmed it with his cell phone. It's some of the coolest elk hunting footage that I've seen this year. And his buddy filmed it with a cell phone, just wide cell phone. Sick. You know, do that. Get out in the woods. Just because you filled your tag doesn't mean that the season's over.
Just don't lock up if he's huge.
Brad, we're talking to you.
But anyway, anybody have any final thoughts on muzzleloader season 2021?
Yeah. Moral of the story, throw rocks.
Throw rocks. Anything else?
It was awesome.
Yeah.
It was, once again, very fun. I miss it already.
Yep.
See you guys in scouting season 2021.
Yep. Yep.
Apartments open.
All right, with that being said, Muzzleloader 2021 out. We'll see you next season.